Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 23 of the Self-Help Podcast. Each week, myself and Sean aim to give you, our listeners, a better understanding of yourselves and the world around you, don't we, Sean?
We do indeed.
Take three that time.
Take three, yes. It was very good. Getting lower each time.
How you doing?
I'm very good.
Good week?
Very good. Yeah, good week. I've had three firsts for me. Four firsts, maybe. Number one is I started working with our good friend Conrad, who's a sports coach, who's actually got me running 5K. Amazing guy. We'll put a link up to his...
We will. His, yeah, Conrad's a top fella.
And he actually got me running 5K, which is brilliant, because I did that three times. And then on the fourth time, which was my next first, which I was running in the frost... which was
it's
cold, so that was a good experience.
Yep.
Until I got to halfway through the run, and then I did something to my Achilles and the calf.
Did you not warm up properly, Sean?
I think that's probably the issue, especially because it was cold. But that's a learning point. So that was a first as well. So a series of firsts. So I've taken a rest this week, and then a couple of days I'll be running again. So.
You'll be back. You'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to be a Greek god. I'm definitely going to do a marathon.
Good on you. Any long term trouble, get on a bike. Cycling's good as well.
Yeah, but cycling isn't running a marathon, is it?
It's not. No, you could do like the Tour de France or something like that.
Yeah, it'd have to be. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good that time of year. We don't try and talk too much about time in this, because people might be listening to this podcast months down the line. It might be summer.
Yeah, yeah.
It might be 2050 when people listen
or
to this.
Or if someone's actually down in the southern hemisphere, they may be stepping into summer at the moment.
Exactly.
We're talking about stepping into
winter. It's getting cold here.
Yeah, yeah.
We just had Halloween and bonfire night last night.
Yep.
So I've had fun setting fire to things last night. And,
yeah, it was raining too, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but we're still out in the garden.
Yes, yeah.
The fireworks were going.
We're British. We'd still do fireworks in the rain.
For those new to this podcast, you can find out more information about the work that Sean and I are doing at liveinthepresent.co.uk. You can also get your mitts on lots of cool little goodies in our free mindfulness toolkit. Just put your email address in the website and we'll send you some cool stuff. This week, it's a meditation special, isn't it, Sean?
It is. It is in two ways. We're going to do some real meditation online.
We are. Every episode of this podcast is very special, of course.
But this is extra special.
It is, yeah. We're going to have to do some actual practical meditations, aren't we?
Yeah, and also we're going to be listening to part of our interview with David.
We are. When we were down in London, a clever chap called Dr. David Cox from Headspace popped along to visit to have a chat with us.
Yeah.
And we spoke at length with him about the science behind meditation, didn't we?
Yeah, and the medical stuff, and also the work that Headspace are doing.
Yeah, we're big fans of Headspace, aren't we?
Yeah.
You've been using it and referring it to clients for quite a while now.
I do it. I encourage people on a daily basis to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should be on a commission, really.
We should. Yeah, well, this isn't... Yeah, they're not sponsoring this or anything. We're letting you know about it because we like the service.
Yeah, and it's such a useful app.
Yeah. And it's interesting seeing its progress because it's come on quite a bit in the last 2-3 years since it launched. So, yeah, very shortly, you're going to hear the short version of the interview. And if you want to get the full version, which goes really in depth into the science behind meditation and what Headspace is doing, visit the link, which we'll tell you about shortly. Fascinating stuff, I think. So, yeah, and after the interview that you're about to hear, Sean and I are going to dive into meditation more generally and just discuss it at greater length from our perspective.
Yeah, ending up with a couple of wee exercises to do.
Right, okay, before the interview then, let's just explain a bit about Headspace, shall we, Sean? I mean, it says on the website, headspace.com, that Headspace is meditation for modern living. It's been started by a clever chap called Andy Puddicombe.
Andy Puddicombe, yeah. Andy Puddicombe had a similar life experience to me in the sense that he went off and did some monastic stuff and then came back and... has brought meditation. I read a quote once a little while ago that said that Andy's doing for meditation what Jamie Oliver has done for food.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's quite a good description because he's presenting meditation in a way that is digestible for the Western mind, the Western world. A very knowledgeable guy, a lot of experience, and a great team behind him. I mean, from your point of view, you talk about the graphics, and the way they present the whole app.
Yeah, really smart.
And very, very clever stuff. Good.
Yeah, there's a cool little TED talk by Andy. If you want to get to know him a bit better, called "All It Takes Is 10 Mindful Minutes." I'll put the link up in the show notes to that. But the app and the website, step-by-step meditation stuff. It's a free version. Well, plenty of it is free. There's a paid option if you want to dive in deeper still. They've had quite a meteoric rise, the company. They've got an office in Los Angeles now, Santa Monica, I believe, which is where Andy's based at the moment, which is pretty cool. I can't believe they didn't fly us over for the interview, or for maybe part two, if they want to...
I think they should. I mean, I use it every day with clients, but I also took the opportunity of taking out one of their lifetime subscriptions. For me, it's useful to see how they're developing and the work they're doing, and obviously because I use it with clients, it's useful. But probably on a daily basis, lunchtimes for me when I'm in the hospital doing clinics, and I'm quite stressed by all the stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
If we can use stress as a word after our last podcast.
You're not allowed to use that.
Not allowed to, but when I'm working hard. I will take at least 15, 20 minutes out at lunchtime and stick the headphones on and do a bit of Andy headspace.
Very good.
And it's good.
Right, well, let's get to the interview. It's with a chap called Dr. David Cox, who is the Chief Medical Officer at Headspace. He's responsible for overseeing all of the science and medically related research work. From our talk, we can tell he knows his stuff. He's a qualified doctor, and he worked for a time in accident emergency in London, which I can imagine would come in handy for that.
I use meditation a lot with A&E stuff.
It must be insane working in that environment.
Huge,
So yeah, here we go. This was recorded in London a few weeks ago. Let's go there. Okay, David, thanks for joining us. I guess my first question is, what is Headspace?
Sure, so Headspace is a company whose mission is to improve the health and happiness of the whole world, which is quite a large, far-reaching thing to do. So the immediate next question is, how? So what we're doing is we have an IT platform, so you can get this through your smartphone, any variety, or just through the internet. And through that is delivered special content which teaches you the techniques of mindfulness and meditation. And it is those things in particular that we think, if more people do, ideally everybody did, would significantly and quantifiably improve the health and happiness of the whole world.
One of the bits of evidence is that mindfulness practice changes the way that the brain functions. Do you have anything to say around that? What's actually happening in the process?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is absolutely fascinating. It's something that's come out of fMRI, functional MRI scanning, where you can see changes in blood flow in different parts of the brain in real time, more or less. And I think there's kind of two ways of looking at it. If you're more of a kind of, evolutionary behaviourist type, then in the brain, the amygdala is a part of the ancient brain, and it's all to do with your emotions and your kind of split-second thinking, and it's based on survival instinct. Mm-hmm. And that's the seat of that bit. And then the frontal cortex, right at the front of your head, is more to do with executive decision-making, planning, the logic, the thinking.
Yeah.
And often those two are kind of in opposition to each other, and hopefully in a fairly nice balance. And it seems to be that what we think is happening through mindfulness meditation is that you are strengthening the frontal cortex so that you become able to have more flexibility at controlling that balance between the ancient brain and the logical thinking brain. Why might you need to do that? Well, because I'm sure lots of people know that feeling of red mist is a good way of describing it. So red mist is just one of many different instances where your ancient brain, the amygdala, has kind of taken over and your fear, fight, flight response has kicked in. And often people do things or say things or feel things that afterwards they think, I regret that a little bit, and I wasn't thinking clearly. And that's you know, it's in the words, I wasn't thinking clearly. And it's because at that moment, the amygdala had very much more control over the balance than the frontal cortex. Mindfulness helps redress that balance a bit, which means that you have a bit more control over yourself and your experiences and perception of reality.
What would you say about the length of time that people should attend to mindfulness practice?
Sure. So that's a great question. And there's two parts. One is about the amount of time that you sit down for in one go.
Yeah.
And the other is about how frequently you do it.
Yeah.
So the studies on the physiology of the body and the stress response in particular show that you start getting the beneficial effects of relaxation after about 5 minutes. So that should be the minimum.
Yeah.
Most of the studies looking at the effectiveness of mindfulness on what something in beginners focus on sort of 10 to 20 minutes. That seems to be about the sweet spot. So from our perspective, trying to get everybody out there to do this, we think it's somewhere between 5 and 20 minutes is the right amount. You know, seasoned practitioners of meditation will commonly sit for 45, 60, even more minutes, and that's absolutely fine. The thing is, you know, from the perspective of your average person in the street, if you tell them to sit down for an hour a day, they're just not going to do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, given that you're starting to get physiological benefits of 5 minutes, and between 10 to 20 minutes is long enough to teach them in bite-sized chunks how to do this stuff, but not have them sitting for so long that they're like, oh my God, is this not done yet? Right, I just can't afford this time.
Yeah.
We think that's about right, between 5 and 20 minutes, 10 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, from a personal point of view, the only way I can do my meditation effectively is to get up early and do it between 5 and 6 in the morning.
And
the day eats it.
Exactly, and I think building it into your routine is the way of doing it. That's what I do. You know, I do it in the morning after a shower before I have breakfast, because that is, every day, that's the same.
Yeah.
My evenings are not always the same, my days are not always the same, but my mornings are almost always the same, so that's where I can just slot it in.
That's where the habits come in, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then the other perspective is actually, it's less about how much you do in any given sitting, it's very much more about how often you can do it. If you can do it every day, if you drop a day here or there, you know, it's not such a big deal. If you do it once a fortnight, you're not going to have any effect whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you literally, you can just get into the habit of doing it every day, A, you're learning in small, manageable, bite-sized chunks every day, but B, it's becoming a habit.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing.
Okay, last bit then.
Sure.
Where's Headspace go? Where's the goals?
Well, you know, it sounds kind of slightly trite, but I think it's absolutely true. What we want to do, as I said at the beginning, is improve the happiness and health of the whole world. And I think we'll know when we've done that, because when looking after your mind, when doing something proactively to look after your mind, is seen as seen of in the same way as brushing your teeth or having a shower, or, you know, it's just part of the essential daily routine that everybody accepts is the right thing to do and good for you, then we will have improve the health and happiness of the entire world. And so we are going to keep going until we get to that point where it's just part of the norm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you see that being able to be brought into education? I mean, you grab them younger, then it becomes the habit of life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why not? And, you know, we're getting involved in research at the moment that's, you know, initially looking at mental health in younger people. So we're looking at doing a study looking at OCD in children between the ages of 5 and 15. I'm particularly interested in seeing what benefits, if any, there might be from applying mindfulness training to ADHD, which is a, you know, big and exploding thing. But, you know, just conceptually, if you teach people who are really young how to do this, that it just becomes normal for them, then they will benefit from that for the rest of their lives. And everybody that they interact with will benefit from the fact that that individual has a bit more of a balanced perspective on, on, you know, life. So everybody wins, and the earlier you get to them, the more that's the case.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
I'm just going to say, maybe there'll be a few less military helicopters flying around when everyone's
there. Yeah,
who knows?
Sirens blaring.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, certainly from my point of view, I'm always encouraging people to use the Headspace app, and great to an iPhone and Android. And so many people use it, and the benefits are palpable.
Yeah.
And I do see a huge reduction in medication but a huge reduction in anxiety levels in all kinds of ways, in teams, in the workplace, but also in relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
So from my point of view, it's wonderful.
Yeah, well, we're just a quick plug, we're working on version 2.
Right.
And version 2 is, you know, lots more great content.
Yeah.
Around the actual guided meditations, but also we want to improve the personalization of the journey to the individual. And clearly everything in the world is moving in the direction of kind of social and community stuff, so we want more components of that.
Yeah.
To help people stay engaged with their journey. We had Emma Watson tweeted about the app a little while back. We didn't know that she was using it. And 8.5 million Harry Potter followers crashed our servers. I think it's the only time we've ever been happy to have IT problems.
Right.
Yeah,
you know?
Brilliant.
Big brand ambassador.
Absolutely, yeah.
And just Andy, who's the founder, he's in the States. He's setting up over there
yes.
as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Andy and Rich both. So they're the two founders.
David, Doc. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Thank you.
And best of luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. So there we go. That was pretty interesting, Sean?
Very good.
Plenty more of that interview on our website. If you go to livingthepresent.co.uk/headspace, you can get the full version of that interview, which is 25, 30 minutes.
That is really worth taking the time out to listen to that.
It's
good stuff.
It's in-depth stuff scientifically-wise, but really interesting.
And also listening to David is someone who's very passionate about what he's doing. And the good thing about his work is that he is a meditator. So
yep.
What you're getting is you're getting something from the horse's mouth that is very important. It's good.
Indeed. Okay, yeah. Well, let's go at it from our angle then, Sean. So meditation's been big in your life. How long have you been meditating for?
Well, I was thinking about this, and this may sound bonkers, but the first time that I did any meditation, I was 10 years old.
Wow.
And I was at my aunt's house in Broadstairs in Kent, where I'd been sent for the summer because I didn't get on with my father, so I got sent away. My auntie Wynne, who was a lovely lady, she was a spiritualist, and they used to do meditations.
Okay.
I was included on the meditations.
At the age of 10?
Yeah, to 10, 11, that age, yeah. And from then onwards.
So what kind of meditation was that then?
It was a meditation which was guided meditation, where you're using visualisation as a tool, which is one of the different kinds of meditation that we'll talk about later. And then I went on in the late 60s, I started doing transcendental meditation, all the Beatles stuff.
Yeah, that was pretty trendy at the time, hey?
Yeah, still quite big. I can't remember how many million people do TM, but there's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people. And that's 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening if you do TM. And then I went on to do other kinds of meditation, mantra meditations and Ayurvedic meditations. And these days I tend to do more what would be seen as Vipassana, which is, and we'll talk about the different kinds of meditation.
So what's meditation for you? What do you gain from it?
Meditation, usually people think about it as being stopping thinking, that it clears your mind. Actually, that isn't true. What it does is it changes the way that you observe, the way that your mind is thinking. And you can let your mind be thinking in the background or to one side whilst you're focusing on whatever it is that you're choosing to do in the meditation.
Yeah.
There are goals of meditation, which maybe we'll look at, but those vary hugely. What most people would say these days, especially people that are doing things like Headspace, is they're using meditation to moderate their stresses.
Yeah.
Which is the popular word, which we've spoken about in other podcasts. But, I mean, essentially, meditation from that point of view is like stepping out of your everyday life into a zone.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people zone in different ways. We've talked about people zoning when they're running or when they're doing an activity like skydiving or
yep.
whatever they're doing. Meditation is a particular kind of zone because it has a huge physiological component. It changes your brain chemistry, therefore your body chemistry, right down to the cellular level.
Right.
And the main thing is it calms your system down, so it reduces blood pressure, reduces all levels of anxiety.
Yeah, and there's a lot of science behind this. And,
yes,
you know,
it's huge.
People have been hooked up to machines well.
Yeah, yeah, right down to the point where if you take a brain scan of somebody before they start meditating and then you get them to meditate 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening for 2 years, that's the standard, and then you come and scan their brain again, the structure of their brain has changed. So the bit around the middle, around the pituitary gland, the limbic part in the middle, the emotional part,
yep.
has got much denser in tissue. So it's a bit like someone using a barbell to exercise their bicep. And when you're doing the meditation, you get this great density of build-up of tissue in the middle of your brain. And that makes you a more efficient thinker. But most importantly, it's associated with the emotional part of the system.
Mm.
So you become a more efficient feeler, which makes you more sensitive, empathic, calmer, more able to emotionally process something rather than kick off.
Right.
That kind of, so people that meditate tend to become much calmer people, more efficient of thought, more efficient of action, more effective people.
You said you started meditating early on. Mm. I mean, there are certain, there's been in education the odd experiment with getting kids to meditate in school.
I've done that with teachers myself, 3-minute meditations. And one of the teachers I worked with, Claire, had a very, very difficult class with lots of kids with hyperactivity disorders, high levels of Ritalin medication in the class, and she got an outstanding, excellent review from the Ofsted. What would you call that? It's way we regulate our education in Britain, isn't it?
Yeah.
The inspectors that come along.
Basically, it's a name that strikes fear of God into all teachers.
Teachers, yeah.
Ofsted are coming!
but she got this sort of amazing review because of the change of behaviour in the kids.
Wow.
Yeah. Getting them to do 3-minute mindfulness practice, being able to just calm down, focus, relax. Lots of practical stuff.
I mean, meditation obviously has quite a history. This is going back thousands of years, right?
I don't know where meditation begins as a process. I know that my own discipline, which was Ayurvedic, the Ayurvedic discipline, we're talking about 5,000 years ago.
Wow.
That's not the beginning. I mean, it goes back much further than that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when we talk about meditation, it sounds like this mysterious thing, doesn't it? It's a bit like The Secret, you know, it's not like that. To meditate isn't to stop thinking. To meditate is to be able to take control of your mind and your body, to allow you to do what you want with your system rather than allowing your system to dictate to you what's going to happen. That's the first thing. Lots of people would have spiritual goals in meditation, and words like enlightenment and nirvana and liberation and things like that start to creep into the meditation language. Which, for most people that are using meditation on a daily basis, is probably quite meaningless, because we're using meditation as a practical and emotional tool to enable us to enjoy and function in life. And whether or not there is some deep, wonderful spiritual event at the other end of it is meaningless. I know lots of people that meditate or are vegetarian or vegan, all kinds of things, for spiritual reasons, and that would be built around the concept that the spirit exists separate to the body, that it carries on after death, probably is reincarnative, and that the meditation process is about clearing out the mess that's in your mind that mm-hmm. you've accumulated over many lifetimes.
Yeah.
So Buddha would say that there was a point where he had the realization where he could see. It was like a flash of light for him. He could see all these lives going backwards like a pack of cards spread out of all the lifetimes that he'd ever had. And that whole kind of reincarnative idea of life being a process of going on and on and on.
Yep.
And those images in the belief systems that would follow that, the images about the purification, so that with each lifetime you're evolving at that consciousness spiritual level. So it's a bit like, if you think of the mind as being like a pond, and over time you get this silt on the bottom of the pond and it builds up and pollutes the water. The idea of using mindful meditation is to dip in the water and gradually clean it out.
Well, one of the cool little Headspace videos which explains meditation, it uses the pond analogy, doesn't it? But it uses ripples on the surface.
On the surface, yeah.
To kind of cloud the view of what's in the pond. But it's cool, actually, that video, because it shows you that when you do manage to clear the ripples and you can see clearly, sometimes you might see things in the pond that you didn't want to find, things that are lodged in your brain and that you need to deal with, but it's time to get on with it and deal with them, right?
And I guess from my point of view, I mean, one of the things that we were talking about earlier on was how long should you meditate for? The classic is 5 minutes is a standard to get your physiology at a point where you're relaxed enough for having a good effect. So, although when we start off, when we do our exercises at the end of this, we'll be doing like a couple of minutes, But if you maintain 5 minutes a day, you're having a direct physiological effect. I sit down for an hour, but it takes 5 minutes or maybe a little bit longer to get right down into it. And when you're getting down into it, what that means is that your body chemistry has flattened right out. All the negative stress hormones have flattened out. They've gone. Your heart rate's slowed down, your respiration slowed down, your blood pressure's dropped right back. And the more you do that, the better effect it has on your system. And then you start to produce the positive hormones, the endorphins in the brain, which then have a dynamic effect on your system right down to the cells and the little organelles in the cells.
Right.
So, and if you get your system nice and flat and you start to feed the mitochondria in the cells, that's where you increase your energy levels. So people that meditate tend to be calm, but they tend to be quite energized.
Okay.
Yeah. Whereas you get people that are energized and uptight. Yeah. And which comes back to Bob Proctor's thing that we mentioned before about what we need to do is to calm down and speed up. Well, meditation is a good way to learn to calm down so you can speed up.
So what's your setup then for meditation in the morning? Have you got a little space in the house you go to?
Yeah, our bedroom we have a bay window, and in that we have two zarbutons, which are like little mattresses, which set on top of that is a zafu, which is a cushion, and mine is a smiling zafu, which is like a heart-shaped cushion.
Zarbutons and
Zarbuton is the little mattress.
These are all new words to me.
Yeah, and the zafu is the cushion that you sit on top of the mattress.
Yeah.
And there's a variety of ways that you can put your legs. Some people would sit in a straight cross-leg position. Some people try and sit in what would be a lotus position, where you have one foot on each thigh.
Can you do that?
I used to be able to before I damaged my leg. Not this time, before in 94 when I damaged my leg. That's another story. I sit in what's known as the Burmese position, which is where you have one foot in front of the other, but they're pulled in. And the shape of the cushion is there so that you can pull your heel into the cushion. But once I'm sat there, it's a habit thing. Once I'm sat on my zafu, on my zarbuton, and I put my... I always use a meditation shawl or a blanket. And I have two. I have summer one and a winter one. But when I put those around my shoulders and I'm sat in the way that I sit, I automatically go into meditation mode. My system is habituated.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm doing now. The set that I have at the moment, I probably have for 3 years, something like that. But I've always sat like that, always...
Phone off some in another room or...
Yeah, well, I what I use on my phone is I have a timer which has a gong on it, so and I set the timer depending on what time I've got to sit, and then it'll give me a gong to get me going, and then it'll give me a gong at the end, and then I will spend a little time at the end of the meditation, maybe 5 minutes, doing different things, focusing on thoughts or contemplating or whatever, before I get up and get on with the world. Yeah.
Contemplating the day ahead, hey?
Yeah, getting head on the right way around, which is part of our mindfulness toolkit, because we've got that morning focus. How do you get your head on the right way to enjoy your day?
Yeah.
Really, really important. Meditation technique with contemplation involved. Let's build the visualization for the day. Thoughts become things. Let's go and have a good day.
Do you ever skip or like some emergency call out
sure.
when you don't get to do it in the morning?
Sure.
Do you find that that affects the way your morning pans out or the rest of your day?
Sometimes. Depends on what's going on. That classic idea of that Gandhi would have about meditate for an hour a day to look after yourself, unless he's really, really busy, and then he does 2 hours, and we're doing the reverse. Well, there's times when my life is so busy that I've missed it. I've missed a couple of days. And I'm starting to feel odd now, so because I'm out of habit,
yeah,
and my endorphins aren't where I would like them to be, so I don't feel natural. So then I do a bit of catching up. Some people can fit into a very fixed rhythm of what they do every day. You know that their system is perfect because they flush the loo at the same time every day. You know that their system works. But for me, I try and do my meditation in the morning because I know that if I don't do things in the morning, because the world is busy, time gets eaten.
Yep.
And it's much easier for me to get into the habit of doing my meditation first thing in the morning. The issue for me is about taking the time out for us. I mean, you spoke the other day about how busy your world has become, and I know that you're in a busy phase now.
Yep.
And there's a lot of stuff going on. And one of the things that we've spoken about is you actually attempting some meditation.
Indeed. Well, that's what I'm going to come on to that. I'm going to get cracking.
Yeah. Well, I think that our opportunity in this podcast is to actually do a couple of meditation techniques so that we can do them, but it means that the listeners could have a go as well.
Yeah, of course.
Anyone who's meditated, which means that if we're going to do that, we'll have a couple of periods where there's going to be a couple of minutes of silence.
Ooh, dead air. Yeah,
which means that we haven't gone off the air. We're still doing it. I did this last night with a guy, and we did the two exercises that we're going to do today.
Yeah.
Last night. And there was fireworks going off because it was bonfire night, which was interesting. And also there was a clock ticking. I hadn't realised how loud the clock was in the room that we were using. And so that idea of silence is actually quite unreal for most people. Most worlds are full of noise.
Yeah.
And one thing that's important when you do these kinds of exercises is you don't have to run around trying to find a silent space. You need to find a space in your world.
That's right.
And if your world is a noisy world, that's the world that you need to learn to be still in.
Exactly. Well, I mean, Headspace started up in London, and London, as we found the other week, is a noisy,
very noisy
manic place, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Even 15 stories up. Yeah. And even here, I live in a very quiet part of the world, seemingly. It was suburban, but set way back from the road. But even you said earlier on, what's that noise? Is that the motorway? Because the motorway is a mile that way.
Yeah.
You just hear the hum of it, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, but ultimately, absolutely. Meditation is about taking time out for ourselves.
To me, it's an oasis in the madness of life. The things I deal with clients, which can be rapes and murders and suicides and all kinds of things, one of the biggest issues for me is images. It's the visualizations, the pictures of the things I deal with. And the process of meditation allows me to let go of that stuff. I've learned over the years to let it go. So for me, it's like sitting on the bank and watching the river of life flow by. And allowing it to flow on. I don't need to dam it. Allowing that what is in the present to become the past as it flows on. And not keep holding on to it.
Yeah, that's your analogy, isn't it?
In Andy's work on the app, he uses the image of a motorway. And the traffic rushing past on the motorway. And I get that. For me, I've tried using the motorway. It doesn't work. I need a river. Yeah, my life flows like a river rather than rushes like a motorway.
Yeah.
You know, different kind of feeling, I guess.
But do you think the West is kind of catching up and or the Eastern philosophy, you know, these have been thousands and thousands of years practicing these things, and are we kind of getting to grips with it just now?
Well, I think that you need to say that quote you told me, because that's really funny. I mean,
I saw this on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. Alain de Botton, who's a philosopher, writer, awesome guy. I've actually had a little email exchange with him a few months ago, which is pretty exciting. He tweeted, to overcome the ego and achieve calm, the East has evolved meditation. After 2,000 years, the West proposes sunbathing. Just taking the mickey a bit.
And the issue is that we don't value stillness. We value rushing around and doing things, which is that kind of Protestant work ethic of, like, you know, nose to the grindstone and you've got to keep working hard. Sunbathing is the nearest we can get to allowing ourselves to relax. And it's interesting that he uses sunbathing, not relaxation. Most people, when they sunbathe, I guess they do relax, unless they've maybe got their headphones on and some sounds playing and, you know, what else is going on as well. But to actually have a space where you do nothing, because one of the things that happens in all forms of meditation is that the unresolved things, which is the silt on the bottom of the pond of your mind, starts to float to the surface. So you might find yourself, you've been meditating for a couple of years every day, and suddenly there are issues from when you were 3, 4, 5, suddenly start floating to the surface. And you think, where did that come from?
Right.
And it's because you've allowed yourself to get deeper down into your mind to actually work with the unresolved issues, whereas most of us are avoiding thinking by filling our heads with sound and doing things. The amount of people wake up, turn the radio on.
I know. Most people aren't that comfortable in their own company, are they? There's a show on ITV at the moment called Tales from Northumberland by Robson Green, the actor, and he's done Extreme Fishing.
Yeah.
That's his part of the world, and it's kind of my part of the world. It's where I go on holiday, so I'm like, well, this is brilliant. But the episode two, he stayed... Actually, episode one as well, he stayed in the wilderness because it's Britain's most sparsely populated county.
Is it?
And
now you've said that, it won't be.
I know. Just stay away, everyone. It's mine. But episode two was cool. He stayed in a bothy.
Like I know, yeah.
Apparently there's only 8 or 9 left in the UK, and they're all in Carlisle...
Yeah.
Kind of, or Cumbria, sorry, Northumberland. And he stayed in one on his own. The film crew left him. He had a camcorder on his own. And he stayed there for the night. And he didn't sleep a wink. he got up halfway through the night and looked at the stars because it's also the darkest part of the UK as well. So he enjoyed that. But he woke up in the morning and he said he's found out how little he kind of values his own company. But people don't like that kind of sense stillness, do they? Or being on their
own, you have to face yourself in the aloneness of life. You have to face who you are. You have to face the things that you've buried, and they do come up. When I go on the meditation intensives, and you have the option to sleep in dormitories, I always take a tent and go and sleep on my own, because I would rather be on my own with myself than in a dormitory type situation.
We've also got a little link here between the kind of Mediterranean siesta style and doing a meditation in the afternoon.
Well, I like this because we have what they call a European working time, where we're building up this idea of having to do massive blocks of time. I mean, there are people in some systems that I'm involved in that are doing 14 hours, which is mad, you know, 12-hour, 14-hour shifts. And we expect people to stay there and be efficient. And if you're dealing with other people's lives and stuff like that, it's a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at the way that hunter-gatherers would sleep and work, or you look at our nearest relatives like bonobos and chimpanzees and how they work, they will do a bit of their working world and then they'll take a rest and do a bit and take a rest. And the classic in the... a Mediterranean model is we have the siesta in the afternoon, and we know that if you take someone's bloods before the siesta and after, that their levels of positive endorphins spike after they've had the sleep, and all the negative ones drop down. Which takes us to a very interesting point, because the research, especially the TM research, would suggest that the ratio of deep relaxation and meditation to sleep is 5 to 1. So that 5 minutes of good focused relaxation meditation is like having 25 minutes of good sleep. Now, if you think about the average siesta is about an hour and a half sleep, an hour and a half to 2 hours. If you could get a meditation in of about 20 minutes in the afternoon, it's like you've just had 2 hours sleep.
Mm.
To actually take that time out around about 3 o'clock, between 3 and 4, when most people are dipping.
Yeah.
At that point.
I can relate to that, yeah. I mean, I've had my lunch by then and I'm maybe done a bit of work, but then it's...
Flat time.
Yeah. Not much gets done.
Yeah. And the weirdest thing is that if you look at, like, suicide statistics, that's suicide time. We think suicide time would be in the middle of the morning, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, that kind of thing.
Wow.
And yes, some people are going to be down at that point, but mid-afternoon is a hell of a time for suicide attempts. But if we took that time out and did some meditation, it would be like having a good siesta. So I would suggest that if you can get into a meditation routine...
Yeah, I like the sound of that. I mean, also, siesta, UK kind of sensibilities. I work from home on my own. I could have a nap every day if I wanted to, but I don't because... the shame and the guilt if someone like found me or why aren't you working?
Yeah,
but it's that thing about I'm working, but I'm working on myself. You know, I do this because I need it. I can be more.
But that's efficient. That's our misconception in the sense of we see working as being external to ourselves. It's what we do out there.
Yeah,
you know, we can show that we've moved that pile of bricks from there to there, whereas real work happens inside us. We're changing how we are inside.
Yeah, Alan de Botton tweets about that quite a bit as well. They're in certain societies, a man staring out the window can be seen as, you know, getting really, he's thinking, he's getting some good work done, whereas in the UK and maybe other parts of the West, a man staring out the window, you know, why aren't you working? Get back to work.
I had an interesting experience when I was a teenager, and I was working on a building site digging foundations, and we're digging them with a pickaxe and a shovel. And there's a team of you, all different ages, digging this stuff. And every so often, someone would get out of the trench to go and have a fag. So they'd have a cigarette. So they'd stand around for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they'd get back in the trench again and start digging. And one of the things that you learn is that it's relevant. You're allowed to get out of the trench to have a cigarette and stand around for 5 minutes. But you can't say, OK, I'm just going to get out of the trench and stand around for 5 minutes. Because that's wrong. But smoking the cigarette was all right.
Having a fag and...
Yeah, because you were doing something. Do you know what I mean? So there was this huge pressure of the need to smoke so that you could get out of the trench just to go and have a fag.
I'm just going to go out of the trench. I've got to meditate.
Yes, I'm just going to stand around for 5 minutes. Okay.
All right, lads, I'm off to meditate for a bit.
Yeah. They bury you in the trench.
Yeah. You're having a laugh, ain't ya?
Yeah, mate.
Alford, get back here, Alford. Do some work.
Crazy. We're not kind to ourselves, are we?
We're not. No. That needs to change, man. That needs to change. But...
Yeah.
All right. Should we get on to some practical stuff?
Yeah, let's have a go.
So,
yeah. So the issue has to be that if you are doing anything,
yes.
You have to be paying attention. You really do need to turn this off now.
Disclaimer.
Yeah, disclaimer. I don't want any policeman knocking on my door saying that I've just killed people in the bus queue because you've been trying to drive and do this at the same time.
Not again.
Yeah, not again.
Yeah, seriously, yeah. If you're driving or you're operating anything.
To do this, you need to sit down. Yeah, and there's an importance in that is you need to sit down, not lie down, because when you do these exercises, two principles. One is that your neck has to be freestanding. You need to not rest your head, because as soon as you relax the muscles at the back of your neck here, I'm pointing to the back of my neck, ladies and gentlemen. as soon as you do that, then part of your brain switches off. Mm-hmm. So you have to have, your head has to be self-supporting. If you lie down, you can't do that. Second principle is, if you're going to do any relaxation technique, if you're going to do a meditation or a contemplation exercise, you need to relax from the top of the head to the tips of the toes. If you're going to do a deep relaxation or a sleep exercise, then you relax from the toes to the top of your head. And that's because it turns off or turns on different bits of your system. If you want to go to sleep, relax from your toes up. If you want to meditate, relax from your head down.
Okay.
Yeah. So two principles. So, okay, Edward, you need to have your feet flat on the floor. You need to have your back supported. So stick
those cushion back there.
Behind your back, yeah. But your head, so you're okay.
I feel good.
Yeah, that's okay. So hands in your lap. Yeah, you'd say don't intertwine your fingers, because if you get any tension, then you do that. Yeah, so you need to keep it. Traditionally, you'd have one palm on top of the other like that.
Okay.
Yeah,
let's do it properly.
And if you do a Buddha, then your thumbs are just touching.
Yeah.
So that's a little mudra.
Lovely.
Okay. All right. So the first one we're going to do is a breath focus. And to do that, we're going to do a little relaxation, top head, tips of the toes. And then I'm just going to time you for a couple of minutes just doing an exercise. So at that point, we'll go into the silence. I'll say that we're getting into the silence. Then we'll come back and just see how you've got on with that. And then I want to show you a second one, which is actually shorter, but is quite different in terms of feeling. So, okay, so close your eyes.
Mm-hmm. And everyone at home, by the way.
Yeah, everyone at home, yeah, close your eyes. And just focus on your breath for a moment. Don't change it. Just become aware of it. You've got three lobes in your lung. So either you're bottom breathing, middle breathing, or top breathing. And you'll find that if we relax nicely, by the time you finish the exercise, you'll be bottom breathing, if you're top breathing at the moment. Yeah, so you're breathing from your tummy. Okay, so start at the top of your head and imagine there's a warm wave of relaxation. Use your imagination. As it flows down, it warms and relaxes the whole of your scalp around your hairline. Then as it flows down, it relaxes your forehead and your eyebrows. And as it relaxes your eyes, your eyeballs roll forward as though you're looking down slightly. Eyelids becoming heavy and warm. And then relaxing all the little muscles around your nose, your cheeks and your ears as your face falls into repose. And as you relax your jaw, your mouth and your tongue, allow your teeth to come apart, let your tongue fall away from the roof of your mouth as you relax your throat and your neck. Key there, if your eyes are rolled forward, teeth are apart, tongue's down, you're already relaxing the main places that we're holding tension. Imagine that wave flowing down through your shoulders, warming and relaxing as it goes. It goes down into your upper arms, coming through your elbows, forearms, down through your wrists, your hands and your fingers. often you get a feeling of your arms becoming heavy and warm as they relax. And sometimes you get a tingling in the palm of your hands. That's quite normal. And then just take your imagination, concentration to the muscles at the back of your neck. Imagine them becoming soft and warm, and then allow that warmth to flow right the way down your spine, through your shoulders, down through your ribs, where they're all connecting to your spine at the back, flowing down through your waist and your hips, right the way down to your bottom bone. So muscles of your back just softening, becoming warm as they relax. And then allowing that weight to flow around your chest. Just breathing easily, gently. You might be aware of your heart beating. It's okay. And then allow that weight to flow down through your abdomen, your pelvis, through your buttocks, right the way down through the long muscles of your thighs, through your knees, calves, ankles, right the way through your feet to the tips of your toes. Just allowing yourself to relax. And the key of this is that for the next 2 minutes, nobody wants anything, nobody needs anything. All you've got to do is just relax. So I want you to focus on your breath as it enters and leaves your nostrils. Breath focus technique. All that matters is just that breath. It's all a subtle feeling. It's almost imperceptible, just as the air comes in and out. Just becoming aware of that sensation at the end of your nostril. If you become very aware of it, you find that the air that's going in is cooler than the air that's coming out, because the air that's coming out has been warmed by your lungs. So have a focus on that point. That's our point of attention. As soon as anything appears in your mind, it could be a thought, feeling, could be a physical sensation, could be worries, memories, could be a sound that's in the room or out in the street, whatever it is, don't worry about it, just allow yourself to be aware of it and then let it go. Don't fight it, just let it drift away and focus back on your breath just for 2 minutes. And I will tell you when we're back in 2 minutes. So silence for 2 minutes as you focus. Okay, that's 2 minutes. So open your eyes, but don't forget to smile when you do. So what was that like?
My wallet's gone. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, my wife was wandering a little bit to start with. Just trying to fight the urge not to burst out laughing at the very start.
Yeah.
But yeah, a few seconds in, it's cool. Feel a bit spaced out now.
Yeah. But that's the reason you feel spaced out is because your body chemistry is changing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that spaced out feeling is actually a feeling of calmness. It's the calm chemicals coming in.
Uh-huh.
And if you've been particularly uptight, it can be a bit, whoa, that's a bit strange. And it takes you just a couple of minutes to feel like you're normalising again, mm-hmm. because you're allowing some of those stress hormones to come back in again.
Yep.
And that's just after a couple of minutes. Yeah, 5 minutes is a good time because it does flatten your system out. If you can do longer than that, it's better. We'll do a second one.
Yep.
Which is different, and I use this second one for particular reasons. In the first one we've just done, it assumes that you have time and the inclination to sit and be able to relax. What happens if you're in a state of agitation? Maybe your heart rate's up and you're breathing and you've just had a traumatic experience, as in A&E staff or whatever. How do you be able to switch into a situation where you can begin to pull your system back down again?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no way that you can sit there and go, relax this and relax that and relax, because you're too uptight to make it do it.
Sure.
So what we're going to do is we're going to use an internal sound. And this is what would be described as a mantra. And a mantra has all kinds of connotations, and often people want to use lots of fancy words for mantras. But, I mean, effectively, it could be pound of carrots that you're repeating in your mind. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is we're occupying the mind with sound. The sound that we're going to use, we'll use a good classic Sanskrit word, which is anand, and anand means bliss.
Anand.
So this is bliss meditation. Yeah. So and what we're going to do in this technique is all we're going to do is sit down, close our eyes, and just go straight into the technique, no relaxation. And the technique works like this. You split the word anand in half. So you have an and nand. And nand. Yeah. And what you do is, on it's all inside your head. You're not saying this out loud.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that on the in-breath, you say in your mind, an, and in the out-breath, you go, nand. Yeah. Now, if you just run here, and your heart rate's up, and your respiration's up, you'd be going, anand, 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 in your head. Yeah, not out loud, in your head. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And then, as you calm down, the sound goes with you. So you go, anand. And then when you get really relaxed, it might be, anand. As you relax right down. But what you do is you keep focusing on the sound. So the same thing. When anything's intervening in your mind, thoughts, feelings, emotions, sounds, physical sensations, observe them, let them go back to the sound. Anand. Anand. Yeah?
Okay.
So again, feet flat on the floor.
Yeah. Yep.
Hands. Yeah, is that comfortable for you?
Yep, it's pretty good.
Yeah, thumbs together. Mm-hmm. Okay. So just close your eyes, 2 minutes, straight in. And
let's go.
And on the in-breath, and on the out-breath. I can tell you when 2 minutes is up.
Okay.
Okay, 2 minutes. So what was that like?
It's good. I could have gone on a lot longer then.
Was that different to the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I preferred that one.
Yeah. The thing is that if you're uptight or if you have an active mind, by using a mantric sound, it's easier to focus your mind.
Is Anand a common one, or is it, there all sorts of mantras?
There's all kinds of things. TM tend to use sounds like Aying, Aham. I was working with a lady recently doing similar stuff. She had anxiety issues, and we were using that mantric meditation to calm her down. And she was a very Christian lady, and she didn't like the idea of using a Sanskrit word because that had connotations for her. So she actually used the word Jesus. So it was Jesus.
Okay.
As her mantra for meditation.
There's an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, a comedy.
Nice.
Where one of the guys in that has a mantra, and he's been doing it for days, weeks. Jaya, I think it is.
Jaya.
And he finds out at the end that it means fuck me. And he said, I've been saying this.
Did it work?
75,000 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, choose carefully.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Cool.
So lots of different kinds of meditations. Yeah, I mean, we breath focus, body focus, sound focus, different kinds of sound focus, external meditation sounds. people talk about the word om, and the word they'd use the word om to chant because it has a physiological effect on your system. Now, when people chant the word om, they usually go om, 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 and it has no effect at all because the effect is in the volume and the frequency. Can I do a big one?
Go on, yeah.
Can I do a big one? Okay, I have to stand up to do this. The when you're training to do mantra meditations, what you do is you're taught to stand. I'm stood now, hands together, knees have to be soft so that the hips are loose, and if you gasp in like that, the pharynx and the larynx are in the right place, and you're encouraged to chant a sound which is Nell, N-E-L, like Nelly, right? But it means that you can hit the note. So let me have a go. It would be Nell.
Wow.
Yeah, hear that?
Yeah, let's have a look at that.
Did that spike?
That
probably went off the record. But I mean, that you could do it louder than that. But when you have a room full of people that are chanting at that kind of frequency, that kind of volume, you have a massive effect, and you can feel it physiologically in your body. It's a bit like when a lorry goes past in the road, and you can feel it in your system.
Is that the type of thing that goes on in monasteries in Tibet and that kind of thing?
Yeah, when you start to get proper chanting going on. But it's people that chant at a real frequency,
wow,
a real volume. Yeah. Very different.
Fascinating. Should we go on to our resource of the week?
Yeah.
Because we're going to...
Yeah.
Obviously, we're going to mention Headspace.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Our friends at Headspace, we appreciate their time, and we urge you to go and have a look at headspace.com.
Yeah. And like I say, I use it every day myself, and I'm prescribing it to clients on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, mobile phone app is really cool, but it guides you through the process really easily. It can set reminders and that kind of thing, so you there's no chance of you missing it. Have a look at that. Also, Meditation Oasis, sure.
Yeah, Meditation Oasis, a couple, Richard and Mary Maddox, really good stuff. She tends to do the voiceovers, he does the music. But a massive resource, if you download their app or you go on the site, meditationoasis.com, a huge resource, loads of meditations for sleep, for pain, meditations for kids, I mean, bereavement, everything's there. You know, really, really good resource. The other one that I love and I use a lot with A&E staff is Marty Burrison's One Moment Meditation.
Yeah, this is a YouTube video.
Yeah, isn't absolutely it? Fabulous. And I have one particular guy that I work with on a regular basis who's a lovely, lovely man. He's a medical professional and he's in the process of going deaf. He has a terminal condition, which means that he will be completely deaf. And one ear's gone totally. The second ear hasn't gone, but is on its way. And he's in a situation where he could wake up tomorrow and be deaf.
Mm.
And he's still functioning as a practitioner, a fabulous lip reader, very effective person. And he says that Marty Burrison's One Moment Meditation is the one thing that's kept him sane over the last 2 years as he's dealing with this condition.
Wow.
Because whenever he starts to lose it emotionally, he can use Marty's technique to pull himself back in again.
Cool.
Fabulous technique, really good.
Marvellous. Yeah. There's calm.com, which is an iPhone app and a website. On Varna iPhone app again.
Yeah, cool. Brilliant, good.
There's loads of them out there.
Yeah,
and there's of course our own in our mindfulness toolkit. If you sign up for our email newsletter, podcast alerts, you'll get access to morning and evening focus meditations.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Free of charge, aren't we, Kai?
And it's brilliant.
Yeah, if you, especially if you like the sound of Sean's voice.
Yes, yeah, and I do.
I think we're all done, Sean. That was
That's great.
We've gone on for almost an hour there. Pretty good.
Yeah. So, are you going to be practicing your meditation on a daily basis?
I am. I've got my Headspace alerts set up, ready to go. Of course, I will use our own meditations because I love the sound of your voice, Sean. Like, I don't get enough of it when I'm editing these damn shows. For more information about the work that we're doing, go to liveinthepresent.co.uk. You'll find links to everything we've spoken about today as well on the show notes for this week's episode. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, all that stuff. If you could leave us a review on iTunes, that would be beautiful. We really appreciate it. We love reading them, don't we, Sean?
We do, we do. And I'd just like to say a little word for Rita, who's a lady I've known for many years. And she said to me, I've tried listening to your podcast, and I don't know how to say this to you, Sean, but they're really boring. And she said, I can last about 15 minutes, and then I have to turn it off because it's really
boring. She's not going to get to hear this because this is an hour in almost.
Yeah, but that's safe then, isn't it?
Yeah, so we can say what we want about Rita. What does Rita know? Nothing.
Yeah, rubbish.
Thank you for your feedback, Rita.
Yeah.
we love our reviews, but if you could just share this show, email it the link to a friend, or just tell someone about it. We'd love that because we want to grow our audience, don't we? And let people know about this.
And also, as people are coming in, like next week, we'll do sleep. But if there's things that you'd like us to have a look at, then shout out
ideas, because we're not short on ideas, but we love to get an idea of what you're thinking about.
But
just email us podcast@liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Yep.
Till next week, talking about sleep.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go. I'm gonna do a meditation this afternoon because I've got a lot of work to do now.
Yeah.
And I'll update everyone next week.
We need a word somewhere between siesta and meditation. Yeah. A sedation.
Siestation. I'm gonna go and register that domain. I sense an opportunity. Yeah. Have a good week, Sean.
And you. You take care.
And everyone at home as well.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.
See ya.